This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 376 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. Still crazy after all these years.
We're almost at 8 years.
That's what I'm saying. It's been a long time.
Yes.
And still crazy.
That's funny. I just went, and you went, still crazy. Like,
yep.
You were literally an octave above me.
That's what I'm doing. I like to stay in key.
Goodness. Well, I like to. I don't always do it, but I like to. Do we have any announcements?
I have two heirloom tomato. How was that a show announcement? It is, because I'm very impressed with myself. I went online because I have two heirloom tomato plants. It's seasonally appropriate. Has nothing to do with Outlander. But, you know, they like herbs and gardens, so that's appropriate. But I have two heirloom tomato plants that none of the buds have been turning into fruit. Like, they break off at the stems. And I'm like, why is it doing that? And I was like, I know that I don't have a lot of bees and I don't have a lot of flowers back there for the bees. So I don't have bees.
This is how it's relevant. She mentioned bees.
Lots of bees.
Go ahead.
So I had to become the bee.
No one told the bees that she was there.
No one told the bees that I had fruit that needed to be pollinated. Anyway, so tomato plants are self-pollinating.
That's the
title.
They don't need... No one bees told the bees that I was there.
Nobody told them I was here.
Sorry, go ahead.
So I went online and they said because they're self-pollinating, they don't need to be. They have them both male and female in each blossom, but they need to be stimulated by the bees buzzing of their little wings to stimulate them to self-pollinate. So I went online. I was like, well, what am I supposed to do about that? I'm not a bee. And they said, take an electric toothbrush and buzz the stem right underneath each of the blooms. So I was outside masturbating my tomato plants yesterday.
Oh,
so I'll let y'all know if there's any fruit from all my efforts. I'm very excited. I told Dad about it and I was like, hey, do you guys have a spare toothbrush you don't
molester?
Mind, you know, molesting plants with? And I was like, well, why don't you wait and I'll make sure it works first before. But, you know, I was very excited. But yeah, apparently you can masturbate your plants for more tomatoes.
So I'm sure Jamie and Claire were aware of the whole pollination shebang bang. There are still spots left on our 2021 trip. Just a few, because we've been getting more people like the last few weeks. But the trip is in September. So obviously, the sooner the better. And it's coming up quite soon. Yeah. So we're excited about that.
Get excited with us. Join us.
To find out more, you can go to podabroad.com. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. Join our text community at 916-659-5112. And I think we're ready to start the start. This episode is sponsored by Songfinch.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapter 56 entitled Tar and Feathers. And we are still catching up to what they put into season 5.
Oh, my God.
Because this was absolute. Everything in this
is done.
In this chapter is done. We're not going to see. We've already seen it.
Or it's either done or they skipped it, right?
Yes.
But the point is, it's passed.
But they also, I mean, there were some choices made. Like, they didn't want to deal with the whole penis syringe. They just left that out.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
They had her go to a glass. Because they had her do her original plan. Because she was like, I was going to go to talk to a glassmaker and see if he could blow the glass. And then if I could get this metal thing. But then, this is so much easier. I can just sharpen the tip. And I was like, yeah, I guess they didn't want to go into penis syringe territory in the show.
It kind of was backwards, huh? Because she had those. And then the dudes at the war regulation, the dude stepped on it and broke it. So she had one and then she lost it and then Jamie got bit they killed a snake, and then they made the rattlesnake syringes, rattlesnake teeth, tooth syringes, fang syringes, whatever. So they ended up where they ended up, but it's just, it was kind of, whatever. It's done. So yeah, the second half, I probably won't remember it, so I'm just going to say it now. The second half of this chapter, or at least our discussion, because there's like two scenes here, right? There's the whole thing with the tar and feather bit, and then the little bit after that with penicillin, shooting up the hose, Mrs. Sylvie, all that. So the second half of this chapter, if we don't use "no one told the bees that Summer was there," then I might call it "there's some hoes in this house, there's some hoes in this house," because that's the second half of this chapter. Okay, so
I feel like this should have been two chapters.
It kind of was, right? It was yeah, long I enough mean, to be two chapters.
Right? It's so weird to me. It was connected because they were in town and it was all stuff they were doing while they were in town. But some of her chapters are so short that I'm like, it just doesn't make any sense why this one was crammed together, because they were two very different scenes. That, I mean, yes, they both took place in town, but the whole scene wasn't called,
well,
the chapter
one was
wasn't
a little
called
bit outside of town.
A day in town.
They had to go to Miss Sylvie's, but yeah, she's not like out in the woods. So Jamie goes to make arrangement for the people to, meaning their squad, whatever, to go see Donner. And so Claire's got some time on her lonesome and she has stuff to do. She has things to buy, people to do and things to see. No, I think just things to buy. So as she's walking around the town, gathering what supplies were available because, you know, blockade and upcoming war, yo. So she's gathering what supplies are available because, which is basically salt. She can't get anything else she needs. Cinchona bark is like, yeah, right. The other thing, the sugar was like crazy it just wasn't going to happen. But she got a ton of salt. And she runs into she sees Dr. Fentiman's shop or his office, whatever, his treatment place. But he wasn't in. But his servant was in. And so his servant shows Claire around. And the doctor actually arrives while she's there.
To further show her around to his jars of...
Well, I take it back.
I brought you an
yes,
eyeball.
You're right. I take it back as far as she runs into him. It's not a coincidental run-in. It's literally, she may not be physically running, but she goes to his shop. She has a gift, so this is not an accident. It's happy accident that he is not there and then shows up so she can actually interface with him. But before that, she was like, oh, dang it. But she was a little, what do you call it? Not a spy.
Snoopy?
Putting it kindly would be saying she was very curious, and she is, and she was, but yeah, she was a little snoopy. But she got the servant to show her around a tiny bit. She has, this has kind of been planned, as I said, she has brought the doctor a gift because she knows his tastes regarding specimen. He likes to keep a lot of different specimens in alcohol jars, whatever the chemical is.
To the macabre.
Yes. She has brought him a gouged out eyeball, a la Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Now, it didn't say here, and again, show versus book were so off kilter. Like, it's not equal. I'm not saying bad. I'm just saying it's not, as Summer said, we're not aligned yet. So I'm not even talking about the show. But, well, okay, I will say, in the show, although this part doesn't happen, I think we do see the scene where they're fighting or something happens and Bonnet, like, gouges that dude's eye out. Remember? I believe, even though we don't see that in the show, and I don't think we've seen it or heard it in the books yet, I think we find out later on, because this is a pretty fresh eye. I mean, not one day old, but not a year old, right?
I mean, but it's been preserved. It could have been a month or two old. Who knows?
Fair enough. But even a month or two is pretty new as opposed to, like, you know, a year or more. So however old it is, Ian has it, and... Oh, Ian gave it to Claire. And this
eye... Did they
say
it was preserved in... Hastily preserved in, like, wine?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
I'm really hoping it's red wine, just because then it would look even creepier. No, it would just be creepier, because when it would, like, slide to the side of the jar, it would be, like, eyeball.
Oh, I see. I prefer it so... Well, that would scare the... Yeah, that's true. It would be great, because you don't see it, but if it, like, tips over, you'd see it. And also, when you took it out, I'm sorry, that thing is going to be dyed purple. It's going to be dark. Or at least the light parts are going to be tinged with purple.
I mean, it's
which,
definitely pickled.
So she has this gift for him. She But anyway, what I was trying to say was, we're not told, and I could be completely wrong, but it's just a little bit of a nice wrap it up in a bow coincidence that Ian has this eyeball and Stephen Bonnet at some point in the future or past or whatever has removed a dude's eye. And yeah, and I think we hear Bonnet's not mentioned in this conversation, but I think we hear it was like some fight. I don't know.
He's absolutely kind of brought up because they find he had a guy come in with a hole in his ball,
but not with the
eye.
And he's
like, I really wish I could have kept it, but he took it with him.
I know. I'm saying he's not brought up in the conversation with the eye or any fight. He's brought up later when they go to the penis syringe or something. So he shows her his collection. So she's seeing more of his fascination stuff, whatever.
I have a question for you. I've only ever seen images of elephantitis of the junk online, and they're always huge, like huge. How big of a jar do we think Fentimin had of this elephantitis of the testicles?
Like, oh, I have no idea.
I'm just trying to imagine how large of a jar. Because the ones if you look online, and I'm not suggesting you do, but if you look online, they're huge, huge. I'm just imagining the amount of liquor and the amount of the size of the jar you would need to be able to preserve one of those for medical science.
Not a teensy one, I guess. While she's trying to sweet talk Fentimin into something, he is distracted by one of his great interests. He presents to her the preserved scrot of a man who had come to him for help. The doctor had helped him. It was too far gone. It had to be removed. He removed the scrot from a live man. So, excuse me, he does not present it to her. He doesn't have it. They're talking about his interests of preservation of stuff. And he talks about all these different, he shows her all these different things. And he says, you know, it's too bad I don't have this one, but now does she say this? Oh yeah, sorry. No, he starts it. So he tells her about this guy who came in with an injured scrotum and asked for him to help. And it had a bullet shot clear through it. Claire's first thought was not Bonnet. Her first thought was, well, okay, damaged scrotum or testicle, whatever. Huh. I wonder if that could be the dude that Jocasta pinged. I don't know, stabbed. And then as soon as Dr. Fentimin said, no, there was like a clear gunshot through it. He's like, it was fascinating. And she's like, oh, yeah, no, there's no way. So Jocasta's dude left her brain. Once she realized it couldn't have been that dude, she asks the doctor if by chance the man's name was Bonnet. But Dr. Fentimin said that the man, he didn't remember, but he said the man had not given his name, but he remembers the man, and he gives her his description, and the description fits. A tall man, robust, I think he said light hair, all of that. So,
kind of a
it's kind, well, yeah.
that would be in my descriptors. That's why no one asks me.
So she eyes some metal syringes he's got. And she's trying to figure out, like, oh, hey, what are these? The doctor is like really like blah 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 blah. He's like embarrassed just to tell her what they are, and he tries to tell her. No, he flat out tells her that they're for cleansing ears. I don't know what kind of ears those be, Doc. Then
he's doing it wrong.
Right?
Don't have sex with Dr. Fentimin. He puts it in his ears.
Oh gosh,
he puts them in his ears.
He is saved by the bell, saved by the bell. He's called away for an urgent case. So toodles. The servant then sets the record straight. Claire asks her, and the servant's like, it ain't no cleaner. It's straight up a penis syringe.
Yep.
She's like, I don't have any shame. There's no shame in this. This is the truth.
No, you know who doesn't have any shame? Claire being like, hey, can I buy it from you? Not from him, from you, his servant. And then you can just be like, it was misplaced.
And while before she leaves, or slash still while she's there, Claire asks where Mrs. Sylvie's is, the whole house. And she tells her, and she gives the servant a shilling for the syringe. Boom. So now that Claire has a fully metal syringe, she doesn't need to go to the glass blower. She just needs to fiddle with the needle bit. So, because it needs to be heated up, drawn out, slice off at the end at an angle, all that, and sharpen enough to puncture skin. My thing was, did she do that all in that day? There's no way. Did she?
She hasn't done it yet.
That's what I thought. So then what does she use to, she must be, okay. See, I'm ahead of myself, but also, still? She what?
Does she still, I'm assuming that one's not ready. She's going to have to use, if she still has it, she has the rattlesnake one.
That's what I thought. Okay. I remembered, she must be carrying the rattlesnake syringes. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. So she's got it, but she can't use it yet, but it's good. This year for Father's Day, give your husband or dad a personalized song filled with your favorite memories together. Creating a custom song with Songfinch takes just 5 minutes. First, visit songfinch.com, share a few details, select your music genre and style, and we'll pick the perfect musician to bring it to life.
Songfinch works with over 500 professional musicians who range in genre from acoustic pop and country to R&B and folk, so you're sure to get an amazing radio-quality song. This is the perfect gift for the dad who has everything. So don't get your husband another tie he's never going to wear. Give him something that lets him know how much he means to you. With over 2,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, it's a gift he's sure to love forever.
And while it's a great gift for Father's Day, a custom song from Songfinch is perfect for any occasion. Create a song as a birthday gift for your best friend, or as a graduation gift for your cousin, or as an awesome anniversary gift for your husband or wife.
Shall we listen to a bit of our song? What did we do? What kind of song did we order, Ginger?
We got it for our father for Father's Day.
Let's listen to a bit of it.
You raised us to be curious. You always support us no matter what. We know we can always count on you. You always came to our shows and productions when we went out into the world to earn our degrees. You were right there cheering us on in all that we've achieved.
You go to the link, you choose the genre, the style, the, I don't know if you call it, I guess gender. You choose male, female, which singer you'd like to.
You can request a specific artist. They have an entire sheet, an entire website where you just can look at all the different artists in those styles.
Exactly. So you can check samples and find one that you think would marry well with what you want. And so very, very briefly, that's how we did it. And you heard a little bit of the song. As soon as it came in our email, I listened to it with my mom. And so I made it through eventually, but it was very emotional because it's your dad. And my mom was there, and then she saw me and she got emotional. So yeah. And Summer walked in and she's like,
dude,
nope. She didn't want to handle it right then.
And we were having people over. It was a party. And I walk into the living room and she's weeping and she's like, come listen to this. And I was like, nope.
And she's like, nope, see you later.
I'm going to the party.
So she's heard it, or she's heard most of it. But I didn't have low expectations, not at all. But I honestly didn't know what to expect, except for, I mean, a song. But I didn't know like how I'd feel emotionally, or how it would affect me emotionally, or anything like that. Because you never know what you're going to get. I was very happy with the choice of singer and her style.
It sounds like singer-songwriter. Songs are normally $249, but this week they're $50 off, bringing them to $199. With the code Outlander, our listeners save an additional $20. That's a total of $70 off the perfect Father's Day gift. For only $179, you will get a gift they'll treasure forever.
So visit songfinch.com. That's songfinch.com. And use code Outlander for a total of $70 off. So she's now on her way to try to get some cinchona bark, and she sees that the apothecary shop is a disaster. It is owned by a man named, I forget the first name, but the family's name is Bogus, I think, or Boggs or Bogus. Miranda, she's the pharmacist or apothecary's daughter, was the young woman working there, says that her mother was packing for her and was packing for them all, and that her father was selling their horse. And she's, you know, understandably distraught. Claire goes in to comfort her, and she finds out that the family is about to leave for England. Now, the Boguses, Miranda's family, Claire realizes, were loyalists then. Now, Claire was sorry to see them go, but was glad they'd be safe. Because in a short time, loyalists would end up having their property confiscated. And then, right about this time, someone comes in and asks for Claire Fraser. It's a, as Diana puts it, very healthy woman. It is Jezebel Hatfield Morton. You got to wonder if Diana put Hatfield in there on purpose. Just because of what that would, you know, what that might bring up in an American's mind. That kind of made me giggle. Even though there was no other reference to it, it made me giggle. Well, there is a reference to it. This is like the Wild West, right? Almost, not literally the time frame or the geographic place. It's the wild pre-revolutionary American colonies. So it is not inappropriate to use the name Hatfield.
To be fair, the Hatfields and the McCoys were all on the East Coast, and they were all in like North Carolina, Appalachian. Fair.
So geography aside, she, Jezebel, wants to know if Claire knows where Isaiah Morton is. So this is, we find out, the first Mrs. Morton, or the legal Mrs. Morton. And yes, she means to hurt him.
Well, sounds she is real aggressive with Claire, too.
Yes.
So, I mean, if she's that aggressive to a legitimate stranger that she's never met before, she doesn't have nice plans for her erstwhile husband.
In a conversation with Jezebel, Claire finds out that the threat against the Bogueses was likely tarring and feathering. But apparently, they were tarring and feathering someone right then, right at that time in the town center, or going about it. They were about to. And just then, Mr. Bogues enters the shop. So at least it wasn't him being tarred and feathered, or people trying to tar and feather him right now. But he says they are getting ready to tar the printer. And as he gets his gun and wants to go help the dude, his wife freaks out and says, no, don't go. She looks to Claire to help her. But then Mrs. Bogues is like, yeah, no, I think she'd support me. Her husband is the one currently holding them off all alone. Yeah, that's one way to get Claire involved. Oh, my hex. Shenanigans ensue, as they do. And that rhymed. I didn't know that. The chemist's daughter has followed them. Claire picks her up and shoves her to her father, who drops his gun. And she grabs it before some other dude could get it. And she told the chemist, go home, take your family and go home. And the gun she had from him had one shot in it, and it was primed. There was tar on the front of the print shop. And there's a little bit even on Jamie. Neil Forbes was in that crowd, too. There's lots of mob chat, threats, some jokes. And then Ian appears, and he shoves a gun into Claire's hand. So I must have not followed along very well, because does Claire now have two guns? Did I miss that, Summer?
She at least has one. I remember the one. The thing that I find so amazing about this is just the time period where it's not strange for someone to just walk around and hand you a gun. Like if I went to town, like if I went down to the street or the market and like one of my family members just walked up and handed me a gun, I would be like, what is happening?
Yeah, I'd be like, what? And I'd probably drop it.
Right. I'm like, I don't want that. I would think I was being set up for something. You never saw me today.
So after young Ian shoves a gun into Claire's hands, he uses his hands as a stirrup and stirrups Fergus up to catch a feather bed, which I believe is hanging out or partially hanging out a window of an upper level. And he grabs it with his hook. So he hooks onto it and he pulls. And the eventual result is the mattress is ripped and feathers go everywhere. Of course, this is a great distraction. Jezebel grabs her gun and shoots at Isaiah. And it's so close to Claire that Claire's dazed for a bit. Like she couldn't really protect her ears. And so she's temporarily somewhat deaf. And as the riders run off, Ian and Fergus run along with them. Claire explains the penis syringe to Jamie, because why not? It's the perfect time. She asks him to go to Mrs. Sylvie's to make an appointment for her to go treat the girls. And she says, in trying to convince him, quote, "You're quite accustomed with brothels. You had a room in one in Edinburgh," unquote. And he reluctantly agrees to go with her, but tells her, "You'll pay for it, Sassenach." So that's basically scene one. That's scene one, right?
Like, the idea that she's like, "Go to this brothel." And he's like, "Are you want me to go to the brothel? I'm trying to create a new environment for myself here. And if everyone in this town sees me going into a brothel, what do you think they're going to be saying about me?" And she's like, "Well, then I'll go with you." And I'm like, how is that better? Clearly, because Sylvie had plans for the two of them, it's going to cost more. But, you know, she's like, "I have a girl who likes the ladies. She wouldn't mind it."
We haven't got there yet, girl. You're like completely...
This whole chapter is one chapter to me. I don't have notes. I have feelings.
I understand. You can have feelings. No one's saying don't have feelings. Okay, so since you're already there, let me get caught up to you. They get to Mrs. Sylvie's. So it's curious how Jamie knows she's Mrs. Sylvie and not the maid, as Claire had assumed when they first saw her that she was a maid.
I mean, she was probably dressed. I mean, I don't know what she looked like, but I would imagine she was dressed better than the hooers, even though she clearly takes clients herself.
But not well enough to not be seen as a maid. So that's what was funny. They're told they'll be let in, but you want to come in together, it'll cost you extra. And Jamie and Claire are like, what? And she's like, "For the two of you." She's like, "Don't worry." As Summer, say what you said again.
She has a girl who likes the ladies.
Exactly. So she won't mind. It's okay. She won't mind. We can cater to this. And they're like, not quite what we're here for.
No. And can you imagine, though? These are like middle-aged people. Like, these are like, what aren't they?
Middle-aged whores or middle-aged?
No, I'm talking about Jamie and Claire. They're like in their 50s and 60s, right?
Yes.
So if they're like in their 60s, could you imagine today, like a 60-year-old and his wife going into a and being like, "Hey,
we want someone who's comfortable with the threesome.
What's good, Miss Sylvie? What's good?
We want to unicorn it up."
Right.
So once that's clear that they're not here for that, she's like, "Yeah." Sylvie relays
that, "I'm going to charge you more."
Exactly. Sylvie relays an event where Jamie had actually saved one of her girls by playing cards. So this is she relays the story about how one of the girls was with the dude, and he was not just, I guess it is using or whatever. He was not just getting what he paid for. He was taking advantage of, and she basically said she would have ended up being raped to death. So so battered, so abused that she would have ended up dying. So Jamie made a deal with this dude. He's like, "Let's play this game. If I win, I get the girl." And they did, and he won, and he brought the girl back to Miss Sylvie, so we saved her life. Anyway, so Miss Sylvie says that she's in his debt. So she's like, "Okay, so I'm in your debt, so fine, come in, let's go." So they give her the backstory about the pox or the syphilis, and about, I think they mentioned Manfred. Like, they talk about just why they're there. And yes, this is for the good of the girls. So Mrs. Sylvie's like, "Oh, so you're here to help my girls?" And yeah, they're going to help the girls, but it's also going to help. Great words. It is also going to help all of the, I don't think they use this word,
all the clientele.
All of the clients. I don't think they use the word clients, but today I think they do. But you know, I don't know about back then.
It's more than clients. And the fact that we're in a global pandemic still should just go to indicate that it's not just about protecting yourself, but it's about protecting you. The people you come into contact with, the people they come into contact with, the people they come into contact with.
The pandemic is even worse because you don't have to stick your thing in somebody or kiss them.
But they're going to take it home to their wives.
Oh, I understand. But I'm not denying that it's not dangerous. I'm saying, as important as it is for Claire to do what she's doing, you brought up the pandemic. So all I'm saying is the pandemic or something that is a virus, an airborne virus, is even worse or more important to protect yourself from because you don't got to have sex with someone to get it. But true. Yes, the reason they're there is to protect it, people.
What if the real source of this syphilitic outbreak is Dr. Fentiman because he's just trying to get more specimens for his closet?
You mean he's putting the penis syringe in everybody and not cleaning it?
No, he has a jar with a two-headed baby in it. He has a jar.
So he wants
with a baby
to get
that
got
has
it.
A jaw that she was like, two oh, that's heads. Syphilis or that's gonorrhea or whatever she said. She called it out by the look at it, that it was a birth defect brought on by an STD. So what if the mastermind of all of this is a dude who just wants to up his collection?
I don't know. I mean, who knows? You never know.
I'm pretty sure it's not, but you know.
So it's for the good of the girls and their clients and their families and their kids and all that. So it turns out, we find out that Mrs. Sylvie had young Ian twice. So that's another reason Miss Sylvie needs to be done too. So Jamie does what Jamie does, which is
Ian needs to be done too again.
Oh, that's at the end of the chapter, or it will happen. So Jamie does what Jamie does, which is he plays cards for it. And he says, if I win, we get to inject all the girls. And of course he does. And they do. There. Boom. As this chapter winds down, not quite, but almost, Jamie and Claire are walking back into town and they smell something is burning. It was the print shop.
People.
Ian and Fergus were waiting for them at the inn they were all staying at, and we find out, guess who's escaped? Not Bonnet this time, but Donner. No more TT. Talk. Meanwhile, Ian tells them he's found out about Manfred. Manfred had gone downriver looking for a ship in Wilmington. And this is when, although Mrs. Sylvie already outed him, they confront Ian about Mrs. Sylvie. And yeah, he's like, yeah, he admits it, or he doesn't say no. He doesn't deny it. And so Ian is also going to get another dose of the pee.
Speaking of Ian, this is totally off topic, really, but I'm going to say it anyway because I'm thinking about it. Has he, in this part of the book, has he talked about Emily yet?
In book 6?
Yeah. By now, with what we've read already, they all run together for me at this point. So I'm aware that they lost a bunch of babies.
Well, I think they lost one or two. But at the end of 5 is when he comes back.
Mm-hmm. But has he talked to them about having the baby loss with Emily and her sending away?
If so, I don't remember. I'd have to check. I don't know that it's happened yet in this book, at least in our read along.
The only reason I bring it up is because I saw a TikTok. I saw a TikTok, and they were talking about O blood types and the origins of O blood types. And they said that O blood types they go back to indigenous tribes in North America, so like Native Americans, and then like in Southern and South America as well, but also in Vikings. And I only bring that up because with the Native Americans, I think that they talked about how with the Rh negative factor, which, you know, if you have the Rh negative, you can have one baby, but then every baby you have after that, your body attacks it as a woman with Rh negative. Men with Rh negative don't matter.
Well, a woman can have, with Rh negative, if I understand correctly, can have a poop ton of babies if
their partner is also Rh negative.
Exactly. That's the only way.
Right. So, but it made me think of Ian and his story with Emily, because, you know, if it was an Rh thing, then, and if O is present or prevalent in Native American and in indigenous tribes, then it would make sense that it lines up nicely with Gabaldon's story. That's it.
I agree that it doesn't argue at all against Gabaldon's story, but I don't think that blood type, not the negative or positive factor, is the thing that kills the babies or attacks your body or whatever.
Yes, but here's the thing though. O negative, it's for the most part, it's a big thing with O negative. Having the negative Rh, especially with O negative, because we can only take one blood type, only one. Whereas other negatives can also have O negative blood as an option. Whereas if anything other than my blood type is in my body, it's attacked. So that's why they give all of the shots to pregnant women now who are negative Rh, so that they don't develop. Yeah, so they don't develop antibodies to the babies, basically.
Yes, nothing you're saying is incorrect. I just don't. If you're talking about Emily and Ian specifically, their issue was not the OAB, BBOO, anything like that. It was the negative positive.
Right.
If I understand correctly. Okay. As they're lying in bed later that night, Claire says to Jamie, quote, "I was thinking of tar and feathers. Jamie, it's time," unquote. He replies, "I know." So I don't think it happens. I'm sure there's a discussion. I don't think it happens in book four as they're establishing themselves. She's aware of the timeline, and the war always comes up in every book, starting at least with four. The Revolutionary War, the American Revolutionary War. But it's in book five, and then of course in six. It's in five that they start to have slightly more serious conversations about, okay, you know, we got to make a plan. We know we're going to come, quote unquote, come out as, you know, patriots or not loyalists, I guess patriots.
It's basically they're going to be doing the same thing they did with Bonnie Prince. Pretend to be loyalists while working behind the scenes as long as they can before they have to out themselves.
Yes. And so this conversation
itself.
Okay, they're seeing all these signs like, oh my gosh, there's one. Oh my gosh, there's another. It's like all these you can look at it either way. It's like another domino down. Like at some point when you hit that domino, the one that ignites it, it's going to set off everything else, right? Or technically you could say it's just a slow motion domino. Yeah. Everything goes slowly. Or you could say there's the timing. Or you could say the opposite. Rather than knocking things down, you're setting things up. So either way, both analogies work. But you're seeing one thing line up after another, or get knocked down, however you want to look at it. And that conversation, not conversation about the upcoming war, the conversation about, oh my gosh, is it time now? And never until now do they say it's time, right? Up until now, it's like soon, I think, or soon enough, I'll have to do this. But this is now the time when there's like, it's here. Like they're literally, people are being threatened, and if not threatened, their lives are being threatened. Yes. But now you have loyalists who are choosing, what a choice. Definitely. I'd make the same choice. They're choosing to not get killed. They're going back to England, or some of them maybe had never been there, right? They were born in the colonies, but they're going to England to save their lives. They cannot save their property, at least their, you know, homes and things, but who knows what they can actually physically take with them? Who knows? But to escape with your life and your hide is like a blessing if you can do that, if you can afford the crossing. So we're at this point where we're seeing, like, this is the stuff literally that we read, Summer and I read, and I'm sure many Americans, hopefully all Americans, have read in their history books about, that's where I learned in my late single digit years, or maybe in my early teens, about what tar and feathering was, about what a loyalist was, about the burnings, all of these things. So that's where we develop that vocabulary as kids. Typically, if you've been, you know, exposed to it earlier for some reason, then you'll have that vocabulary earlier. But yeah, the conversation, is it time? It's getting close because I'm seeing XYZ, but not quite. So anyway, we finally have it. It's time. And Jamie's like, yep, I got it 100%.
I feel like they should have just struck out for California as soon as they hit the United States.
Oh, gosh.
Like, because if you think about it, in that time period, they would have been able to, like, do whatever they want. I mean, granted, I think right now it's probably owned by Spain, but I mean, just to get as far away from the Revolutionary War as possible. That would have been my plan. Box it all up and Oregon Trail it all the way. And that was chapter 56. Join us next time when we will be continuing our Breath of Snow and Ashes read along by straddling another part. We will be doing chapter 57, The Minister's Return, and chapter 58, Love One Another. And if you'd like to continue the conversation, please join us at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, a very special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Marlo R. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon and to find out what a co-producer is,
visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you'd like to purchase any Outlander Pod branded merchandise, you can check out our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't joined our text community, why not? It's free. We'd love to be able to say hi to you about once a week or so, or share things, or have you share things with us. Simply text hello to 916-659-5112. As always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to straddling apart next week.
Don't make it sound so sexy.
It kind of is.
It can be, especially when the part is called The Call.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.